Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to come and meet you and to share with you on this rather intriguing title, Digital Evangelism. So I just want to just introduce myself to you, we're going to just take a little while before we get into looking at the whole digital side of things to put this in some sort of a context. And so just to introduce myself, which sort of, this is not me, by the way, it possibly links to the last session that you had, because I grew up in a family that was totally committed to the Lord and worked in the Salvation Army, which is the training college that Pete and I actually went to. Pete often doesn't mention the Salvation Army part, but it was Salvation Army, William Booth Training College in Denmark Hill in London. So, and on my father's side, going back at least three more generations, so I was the fourth generation Salvationist, so it was very much part of me. The whole concept of preaching the gospel and taking the gospel out to the people, and not just any people, but the people that really needed to hear it. And that was really Booth's methodology to get out there. He wasn't satisfied to wait for people to come into churches. He wanted to go out there and share the good news of Jesus with the people. And so I sort of grew up with this, and if we move from the 19th century into the 20th century, this would have been a very sort of familiar scene to me, the open-air meeting. These took place religiously on a Sunday at 10 o'clock in the morning, which was a very nice wake-up to the local neighbourhood when the Salvation Army band struck up with Abide With Me or the Old Rugged Cross or some such tune. I'm not even sure if this actually happens anymore on a Sunday morning. But certainly I grew up with this going out there and bringing the gospel and singing praises. I played the cornet, by the way, just in case any of you wondered what my particular instrument was at the time. But sadly, this picture actually tells us a little bit more, that we went out whether the people were there or not. I mean, you know, we often sort of looked around and said, where are the folks? You know, we go out, we proclaim. But there were one or two children in this particular photograph, and who knows the seeds that were planted in their young lives through that particular witness. So what I want to do is to basically go through history. You've been going through some church history. I want to take you back probably to the beginning of time and introduce you to, you see it, the first tablet. Some of you might have tablets, some of you probably take tablets, but this is your first clay tablet from the Babylonian era, going back probably about 3000 BC. And what I'm going to be talking about this morning is this idea about it. You know, one person will speak the word, and that is vitally important, that the word becomes spoken, but it's also important to record the word, record what was said. That's why we have our scriptures, of course. It's a recorded word, what was said. And so from this very early beginnings of mankind, recording the words, using here simply a stick that was sharpened in a particular way, pressed into the soft clay. And thousands of these tablets have been discovered and looked at by archaeologists and are often found in our museums. And so this sort of tradition moved on. Here we've got an example from the, this is the Rosetta Stone, which was quite an interesting archaeological find. It's written in code. So your hieroglyphics had to be sort of analysed and understood. But as some of you might know, the beauty of the Rosetta Stone was that the same information was given in three languages. So you had your ancient Egyptian, you had your common Egyptian of the day, and also you had it written in Greek. So it was able, this particular find sort of unlocked a lot of the understanding about the mysterious languages of the past. This is the only Bible verse I'm likely to quote, taken from Job, but it's a very interesting one on this particular theme. And can I just say, for anyone who wants to take notes, everything you see on the slides here will get to you. If you've got email, we can sort of forward it to you, so you've got a sort of full set of the notes, all right? So what Job was saying here, oh, that my words could be recorded. Oh, that they could be inscribed on a monument, carved with an iron chisel and filled with lead, engraved forever in the rock. Some of you sketchboarders are probably thinking along the lines that Job was here. But what is it that he wanted to say? What is it that he wanted to write in stone forever? And it was this. He said, as for me, I know that my Redeemer lives, and he will stand upon the earth at last. So this was his testimony. He was an evangelist, surely. This was his testimony, which he spoke out against great circumstances that were coming against him. He declared his testimony and he said, oh, I wish that this could be inscribed in stone. Okay, so we sort of move on and we come through the different eras of history. The discovery of papyrus to make early form of paper, that's where we get the word paper from, papyrus, which was a plant that grew along the banks of the Nile. And by various processes of cutting this very sort of fine needle branch, very long sort of strands of fiber, drying them, pressing them, and then crisscrossing them with the warp and the weave, all right? That's where we get our papyrus from, and that was used for many centuries. And also, of course, we had the parchment. So we're familiar with this. Much of our scriptures were written in this particular style. This is a portion of the Hebrew scriptures here, which I'm sure you all can read fluently, but you maybe tell me after what it says. But but the whole idea here was that the scriptures and other writings would be meticulously copied. Okay, so that there would always be a fresh copy. And if someone from another place needed the information, hadn't got a photocopier, no. So in those days, they had to have a copy made. And so for, again, many centuries, this was the only way that words could be communicated, that recorded word. So here's someone who... representing Martin Luther, who's posting his message. Now, if you use digital, you probably post messages all the time, and we'll look at that shortly. But, you know, Luther, it's next year, I think it's the 500th anniversary of Martin Luther nailing his thesis to the church in Wittenberg. You know, he wanted to stimulate debate. He felt really deeply agitated about the state of the church, particularly about the use of indulgences, which is what this particular document was about. And so to communicate it, it's written out and then he nails it in a prominent place. And this little picture would suggest that other people had other things to say as well. So it was like a notice board, wasn't it, in its day. We then come into the world of print and what a marvellous thing print has been, particularly for the production of the scriptures, for gospel tracts and gospel literature, which millions and millions of books have been produced using print technology. And this has this greatly aided the church, through the last two or three centuries as it brought the message of Christ to the people. And indeed the work of translation, which then also went into print. And so today we have probably far too many different types of versions of the Bible. But there's all different types of the Bible that have come out for all sorts of different reasons. Thank God we have the Holy Spirit to guide us into all truth. I'll say no more. Okay, what about viral technology? Now, back in the days of print, newspapers was the great thing. Everyone loved to read the papers, and the print was super fine. I don't know how they managed to read it. But it was packed full of information, not as many photographs as we'd have today, but column after column of information. But sometimes the newspapers that came out pretty much every day of the week wasn't quite fast enough for the information to get out. And so here we have an interesting example back in the Victorian era. The year was 1861. And I'm going to ask a question for someone to answer. So why did the bells toll in 1861? And this is St. Paul's Cathedral in London. Thank you. The death of Prince Albert. Prince Albert. Sorry? Oh, yes, there's some sweets down here, sir. You help yourself. So, yeah, Prince Albert had been suffering some ill health. The most recent bulletin that had gone out on that particular day was that he was slightly improved. But then he took a turn for the worse. He was in Windsor Castle, and he died at 10 to 11 at night. A telegram was sent from Windsor Castle to the Lord Mayor of London, instructing him to ring the bell of St. Paul's. Now, St. Paul's had a number of different bells, as the large cathedrals do, but this was known as the Tom Bell. It was the largest bell that it has. There's another bell was installed later on, which was even bigger. But this was a very deep-sounding bell that struck out. And the story goes that as the sound was heard in the city of London, so other churches began to sound their bells. And this is why I talk about viral technology. As they heard the bell and news started to spread, and so the bells went out right across. And then the next day, being a Sunday, the news filtered through. I think it took 12 hours to reach Cambridge. And so it was very interesting in their day and generation, how the news got out. I mean, you all know who the new president of the States is, don't you? We've got that. We're not waiting to hear, are we? No. Right. I think I don't want a spoiler for anyone in case you're itching to get the news later on. But I'll just say that Clinton was trumped. Right. Right. Okay. So, yeah, that was interesting. And there were other things that were used back in history. I mean, fires were lit, weren't they, to sort of pass maybe a note of celebration or some event that was taking place. The QWERTY keyboard. Hands up, who has used a QWERTY keyboard? I'm talking about the proper typewriter now. Now, when I was at college with Pete, we had to do lots of sort of lessons and different things. And even before we got to college, we had a study to do on the Book of Mark. I don't know if you did the same one. You probably did. Did you finish it? You're good. he probably struggled with the version because it was the Good News Bible, which probably wasn't quite kosher, but that's what we had to do. And anyway, that's where I got my first typewriter, and I just basically taught myself to type. And it's one of those, now when I say taught myself, not properly, you know, but it was it got me through. And thank God for that, because those skills, those keyboard skills, actually came in so useful for me later on in my working life. But the QWERTY keyboard, great way to get the word out. We're nearly at the digital age, all right, so bear with me. But if you think these things have taken a long time to develop, I mean, this digital stuff, it's so young, isn't it? It's so young. So we had analog technology, and when you were a children and you went to your home, you might remember your parents, if they could afford a television a bit like this one. I think they've just, is it 60 years? They've just had a celebration, haven't they, since the first TV broadcast. I think it's more than 60, but, 80, yeah. So this was analog technology. It was new technology to actually get a live recording, a live show to appear actually on a screen. This is what you've been waiting for, isn't it? Digital technology. Of course, we moved through a whole era of computers. Now, I wonder who used one of the early computers. Would you be bold enough to tell us what kind of computer you had? Sorry? Amstrad, yes, that was one of the early ones. Commodore. Very good, very good. These are the early, you're called early adopters now. That's the phrase they use for if you get into the technology early, yes? That's brilliant. Well, they're probably worth a fortune now, aren't they? The Sinclair's still use it, right? Very good. So we're familiar with a lot of this technology. I know for some of us, we thought, oh, we don't need that. We'll just stick to the typewriter or stick to the, you know. But it's now surrounded us. And I don't know why, but I just when this technology came around in the 80s. I just had an interest in it and was sent on a week's course to learn about, it was called Introduction to Microcomputers. That's where I got my first taste for the world of computing. So now we've got our laptops and our iPads and all sorts of technology. We're familiar with that. And particularly the mobile and smartphones now, where pretty much you can do whatever you want in terms of communication on your smartphone. So what has changed in this sort of period? We've had a quick look back into history. What is really changing here? And one of the things that's changed is that in the past, communication was really about one person or a few people speaking to the many. Okay, it relied on an individual to say something, to get that word out. Maybe it was to speak or to write a letter, to get that message out. But with in the digital age, everybody is part of that getting messages out, and everybody can also receive whatever they want to hear. Okay, it's that ability to get the information out, which is called many to many. Okay, so in this many to many, not just relying on a few, but this is an opportunity that lots of people have, and opportunities that all of us can have, and all of our friends can have, and all the people that you meet on the streets, they have this ability too, which we're going to explore now. Is everyone an evangelist? Well, I know you would say, of course not, we're not evangelists. But I'm talking about sort of evangelist in a slightly secular sense, okay? Now, if you look closely at this photograph, there is something unusual about it. What is it? They're looking at their mobile phones, that's right. Now, I found it on Google. This doesn't happen all the time, but you can find stuff, can't you? But I just wanted an example. So, have you got a smartphone with you? Would you do something for me, all right? If you've got a smartphone, I want you to, in a minute, just to hold it up in the air, and I'm just going to take a photograph, if that's all right. Okay. All right, can we have them all up in the air, please? Thank you. I'll take two shots so we don't all get left out. Thank you, that's one. Hang on, oh, processing. Thank you. Wow, is everyone an evangelist? You see, we're all part of something, aren't we? I know it wasn't quite all of you, but we've got this technology at our fingertips. So this was some work I did about a year ago. I was doing a survey of churches in Bristol, and I was looking at their engagement online, how many of them were using Facebook, how many using Twitter, how many had websites, etc., etc. But what I wanted to do was to also quantify the size of the audience that the churches in the Bristol area could reach. And these were some statistics. It's purely based on statistics for the UK population, brought down to around half, well, not quite half a million, is it? 442,000 for Bristol, okay? So these are the numbers of people that we reckon are using these technologies just in one city alone. So you could have maybe similar figures for Cardiff and wherever, whichever city you're from. So the numbers are big. The potential of reaching these people using digital evangelism. Facebook comes out on top, followed closely by Twitter. YouTube is very big, and I'm going to be talking about these in a few minutes. Then we've got one called LinkedIn, okay. We've got Instagram, and Google Plus, and there are others as well. The list could go on, but these were the main ones. So that's quite significant in terms of, you know, where are the people at? What are they using? How can we actually communicate with these people? Significant numbers. And you probably know this anyway. We know this. We know it because we look around. We see lots of young people using this technology. In fact, all ages are really using this technology, but we maybe use it in slightly different ways. So this is a definition of a social evangelist. It's from the Urban Dictionary. I'll just read it to you just to see, you know, how it matches up with your understanding of evangelists. Because what I've found in my working life is that more and more, and especially in the digital field, you hear talk of evangelists. Well, they're not talking about you guys. You know, we're talking about people who are seen to be evangelical about what they do. All right? So this is a little summary. Yes, a summary of a social evangelist. A person who speaks to their audience in a biased manner with the purpose to intrigue and captivate. The sole object being to gain the attention and support of the group in order to infect them with their ideology by successfully selling or pitching ideas and strategies. In turn, infected members then carry this ideology in a viral manner to the wider population. That's the way the world is looking at evangelism. See, in a secular, in a secular sense. Interesting. So we're going to be moving now into the main part of what I want to speak about this morning. That was just by way of background to see where we've come from, which is very important. And I'm glad that you're doing that in terms of looking at your church history. Where have we come from? What were the lessons learned along the way? But what I want to say is that digital technology, it's nothing really new. Where do we get the word digital from? Digits? Clues in the picture. Digits. The Latin word for finger is digitus. Okay? And how many digits can you have? 9. Because they're single. A digit is a single number. Okay, so as soon as you start hitting 10, it's 2 digits. 10. Alright, that gets us into the whole binary thing. Because the whole binary is based on the 1 and 0 and the combinations of them. But that's for next year. Binary factors. Yeah, so digital technology. So just think about it for a moment. Think what we've looked at. The hand that held the stick that pressed into the clay. The hand that held the chisel as the characters were cut out of the stone. The hand that held the pen that wrote the pages of scripture. It was all the hand, wasn't it? And we can follow this right through. The fingers that learned which keys to press and, oh dear, you know, get out the Tippex. On the typewriting days. And so on the keyboard. And now we're into touchscreen technology. It's nothing really new. It's still digital, isn't it? Digital. Okay. So what I want to suggest is that a digital evangelist, I would almost say, let's put a question mark there, all right? Digital evangelists, question mark, just to see how we feel about this, how we think about this. But if there is such a role as a digital identity as a digital evangelist, I want to suggest that digital evangelists can have different roles. And I'm doing this to try and make it a little bit easier to understand the way this all works. So I'm going to identify five different roles. The first role is the role of an author. Okay, so don't think so much about the digital side for a moment. Just think about you as an individual and the way that you like to communicate, the way that you like to maybe generate ideas or write your ideas down. I want to ask, could it be that you are an author? That you have original ideas, that there's a creativity in you around the use of words. Okay? Because this is what authorship is about. It's creating written content. And in a minute, I'm going to explain how this connects to digital evangelism. The next one. Plenty of these. Do you like responding to what other people are saying? Have you got a view, on what's going on. Now, sometimes I get a bit tired of the commentators, and if I was to put the news on today, it's going to be wall-to-wall commentators, which really, well, what, you know, it's not the news, is it? It's what people think, their opinions, their ideas. It has value, and there's great opportunities to engage in dialogue as a commentator. We're going to look at that and look at how we can do that in a digital environment. responding to content. Reporters. You know, now, this is where you maybe go to an event or you hear something said and you're going to feedback that information to maybe another group of people. You're going to capture the essence of what you've seen, what you've heard, what it was like, what the food tasted like, and you're going to report on that. So it's a little bit more based on the facts as you see them, you're reporting. In many ways, the gospel writers were reporters. They were recording events. Jesus came here and he did this and he said that. This lady got healed and so and so, so and so. They were reporting events. And they shared them, of course. Photographers. This is another way of witnessing events in a photograph. Very, very important in the digital environment. The value of a photograph. In fact, I find that people will be, you can impact people more with a photograph, a good photograph, than a whole bunch of words. Okay? We need both. We need both. But imagery is really, really important. And when we're bombarded with so much information, it's maybe the photograph that's going to stand out. And finally, another role is a role of broadcaster, which might sound a bit grand, but I'll explain that again in a couple of minutes. This is where broadcasters are showing the world events, things taking place. And there's some great technology that we can pretty much all use if we want to, if we feel it's our thing, to broadcast. We can all be broadcasters. Okay, so having identified these roles, I mean, there may be others. This is not a sort of exhaustive list. There may be others, but these are five which I think are fairly solid. Now, what we're up against is hundreds and thousands even of different apps and digital platforms that are out there on the internet. Okay, how on earth do we decide which one we should be using or which ones we should be using? Because it is overwhelming. And although we have some strong candidates in terms of the most popular programs, how does it work with our particular role? And that's what I want to give you some suggestions today as to how we can find our way through this. So going back to our list, here are some suggestions. So if you think that you might be an author, that you like to create your content, then I would suggest that you should be looking at adding value to websites. This is the information that is going to be there day in, day out. Yes, it needs to be updated, it needs to be refreshed, but it's a great place to put your content is on a website. What about an ebook? This is part of the digital world. This is basically an electronic version of a book, and I will talk about that in a moment. Email as well is a great way for authors to put their ideas together and to send it out to those email addresses that you have. Commentators, think about WordPress. Now, WordPress is probably the number one blogging platform. Okay, the word blog comes from web log. You know, a log is like a diary, ship's log. You know, the log. So a blog, blog, is an online log. It's sort of a way for you to express your thoughts on particular topics. There's quite a bit of creativity in that, and it's a great way to engage with audiences, to actually write a blog. Also, we've got Facebook is good for commentators that you want to put your penny's worth in on a particular topic, be it the presidential election or whatever it might be, and also LinkedIn. I will explain these in just couple of secs. So reporters consider Twitter and Facebook. Photographers, you've got Instagram, which is all about photographs, and you've got Flickr, and you've got Pinterest. And broadcasters, we've got YouTube, Facebook, and Periscope. Anybody heard of Periscope? Right, I will explain about that again very shortly. So, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go through about all those different applications that I've mentioned. I'm going to go through them, there's about a dozen, and I'm going to give you fairly quickly, as I say, these notes are all available to you, 5 tips on each one. All right, so that's where we're going now. So these are tips for authors using websites. So your website needs to be attractive, needs to be up to date, so that if you've got a new section, that's kept up to date. Otherwise, people think, 2015 October was the last entry. Are they still around? What's happened here? Very important, because it just stays online, that information, and people may come upon your website. Easy navigation, easy to find your way through to the different pages. So having that navigation probably along the top for your main landing pages. SEO, really important subject. It stands for search engine optimization. And it's basically the way that, how will people out there find your website or your blog, all right? How do they find it? They use it by putting words into search. If they don't know your actual your web address, they're going to search. So let's just say you're writing about the second coming, okay? And people are putting second coming of Jesus Christ into search. Now, if that phrase is on your website, all right, then that will be listed by Google. Now, the problem is, along with 100,000 other pages that Google will list with that phrase in. But the idea is that with search engine optimization is that you make sure that the key phrases that you want to be found for are prominent in your website. So it might be a page title. It might be a heading, and it will be in the first paragraph of your text. If it's further down, it's probably not going to be found. Okay, so it's a whole big thing. Some people, their whole jobs are SEO, and there are thousands of them across the country. And thirdly, your website needs to be linked to social media, so that anyone coming onto your website and easily share it or share a page of information or share some content on their social media, particularly Facebook and Twitter. So there are 5 quick tips for authors on websites. E-books. Now I've some personal experience of e-books because about 3 years ago, I felt the Lord was giving me a sort of writing project. I never thought I would ever write a book, incidentally. It was just, that was way, way beyond me. Never thought I'd do that. But the writing did develop, and it became an e-book. And it's now, it's been available for a while now on Amazon. It's since been produced as a hard copy book by Amazon. So it's only printed if someone wants to buy it. There's no stocks of these books. They're ordered on Amazon, and it's a great system. But the reason I'm mentioning this is that maybe some of you thought about writing a book, or maybe you've written a book and not had it published. And I would encourage you to explore the self-publishing route and using an ebook to get your information out. This book, it sits on Amazon day and night, and people anywhere in the world can basically download it. Some of them can download it for free. Some of them will pay maybe $1.99 for the Kindle version. So it's not a particularly expensive way of encouraging people to read if you've something to say. Have any of you ever thought of writing? Any or have written? Pete? Yeah? Yeah? Okay. So these are ideas for you. You know, if author is the thing that fits with you, this is something you can explore and use this digital age to get your communication out. We don't have to sort of go knocking on the doors of publishers. I mean, if you're really great at writing and the people who read your book think, well, that is amazing, you know, by all means you can try, but it's a long process. A lot of people do try that route, but self-publishing does get it out there. It's the customer pays for it. No, there's no cost. It's an added, this book is $6.99. So that is the print cost over and above the digital version, which is $1.99. Amazon. It's one of their companies. Yeah. Okay, so quick tips for the authors on ebooks. You basically start off using your Microsoft Word, all right? So just your regular word processing package to write your book. That's nice and easy. Needs to be proofread. That's a really important to be proofread, not just by yourself, but other people need to proofread it because you have that sort of blindness to what you've written yourself. Get feedback on your first copy of the book. I found that really helpful. Sharing a copy with a few friends with some questions for them to answer. Get a nice cover design. I got my son who does graphic design to sort of help put the cover together for this book. So get a nice cover design and have a look at the Amazon. There are other ways of getting books out there, but Amazon is by far the biggest way of getting books out there. So that's a great way of getting the word out to the people as a digital evangelist. Right, email, MailChimp. Have you heard of MailChimp? It's the easiest and probably the best way to get to construct your emails, to have your lists of different groups of people held by MailChimp. It's free, doesn't cost anything. You can upgrade and get more bells and whistles, but the standard one is pretty good. And so some top tips. The headline subject needs to be really spot on, and we're going to do a little exercise in less than 60 seconds, so I'm just giving you a warning, all right, just a little break from my voice. It needs to be well written. There needs to be a call to action. What do you want people to do when they read the email? You know, it might be just to pray, but maybe it's to might be to finance something, you know, or to what do you want them to do? Think about that within the email. Link it back to your website. That's really important. Generate those links. And also, by law, we have to offer unsubscribe. All right, it's the law now. So if your email's going out to your band of followers, they need to have the freedom whether they want to continue receiving it or to hit the unsubscribe button, which I do regularly because you can only take so much in, can't you? But if it's good, then I'm sure they won't unsubscribe. Right, so we're going to just take we've got a little quick exercise. What's our timings here? Is it quarter to two? We've got a... One. All right. This is just going to take no more than 5 minutes. Okay, so I want you to get into pairs, as it says on the screen. There's a story is going to appear on the screen. It's a testimony story. And I've got some cards here, and I want you to write on the card your best subject line. So you all understand what a subject is in an email, don't you? So yes, please. Have you all got pens? Have you got pens or do you need pens? Sorry, one more thing. This is the story, by the way. So you write, if you write on the, not the shiny side, write on the other side. I think probably the pens will work better there. No more than seven words, all right? So your subject for your email on this story is no more than seven words. Thank you. Any pens? Work as a pair, yeah. It'll just be a bit easier. Anyone else want a pen? Just one.
It's who's the audience? Depending who the, what title you would make would be depending who you're trying to get across to.
Well, let's just say it was. Say it's the people who you generally email, so your supporters.
Okay.
You're sharing a testimony. Okay, one more minute. Thank you. Okay, are we all done? If you can just hold them up if you've got it finished, and I'll just collect them. Thank you. It's totally anonymous. Thank you. Thank you. Lovely. Thank you. Thank you. Great. We're all done. Thank you. Yeah. Any more? Thank you. Thank you. That's great. Thank you. Are we all done? Thank you. That's great. Thank you. Thank you. Who did five?
Me.
Very good. It's actually really good to, if you can write as an exercise, if you're sending out an email, do this little exercise and try and write out five, and then, you know, ask someone which do you think is the best. No, that's great. Do you know, I mean, we all get email, don't we? And we don't always read the email. And and even if we do open it, we might not read it. The technology can actually, in fact, the MailChimp technology can tell you how many people actually opened the email. It doesn't tell you who they were, but it'll tell you the percentage. And the percentage is quite low with email. This is why I've just done this little exercise this morning, because if you can get a really good subject line to stimulate the interest, they're more likely to read your email. Because your email is really important to you, you know, but it's just in the middle of everything else that's going on. So I'll just read out a few random, all right? Jesus, ultimate lifeguard. Good. Jesus fixes refugees' boat. With Jesus in the boat, ... God's still in business doing miracles. What do you think of this? Questions are quite good, but I think that one might need a little bit more content, because there's weird stuff comes by email as well, isn't it? What do you think of this? I would not open that one. Refugees saved in boat by faith in Jesus. Boat people saved by name of Jesus. Miraculous experience on open seas. Jesus saves. Jesus is a great mechanic, etc. Really good. Thank you for doing that. Okay, so we're back to tips for commentators. I mentioned about WordPress. It comes in basically, there's two versions of WordPress. There's a simple version of WordPress that you can use, and then there's a much more sophisticated version. So you want the simple sign up for the free account with WordPress. I would say you'd need to have a bit of an idea about the way web pages are put together if you're going to use this, or find someone in your church or someone you're connected to who's quite handy and maybe used WordPress to build this for you. But this is a great way for blogging websites. So here are the five tips. Keep blogging, all right? So you really need, say, if it's one a month, or just keep those stories coming. Again, good headlines for your stories, well written. Have some good photographs in your blog. And also, you know, this is about having a dialogue. Because comments, you can get people to comment on what you've said. Well, surely you want people to comment. Okay. I mean, if it's some obscene comment, then you can deal with that. You can delete that. But at least have some comments there so you can have a sort of a dialogue going on. Right, commentators using Facebook. It's temptation sometimes, but don't overreact, okay? When you're responding to what someone has put on Facebook. It happened to a guy I know, and he makes some rather unkind comments about somebody else, and an hour or so later withdrew it and had to sort of say, I'm really sorry, I shouldn't have posted that, and it's just a quick reaction. Keep it short, show respect, we know that. Hootsuite is another free program you can use if you want to schedule a number of posts. So particularly if you're on holiday or you're doing something else and you still want some information to be going out, you can use Hootsuite, and actually you put the posts in and it's got a little calendar and the time, and you can say exactly when you want these messages to go out, appear live on Facebook. Quite handy if you like using it. But remember, what you say on Facebook is as good as permanent. It's as good as written on stone, really. It might be, and we've had all sorts of stories we know about people who've said things and then they've had trouble about what was said. So we'll have to remember that. LinkedIn. So this is, you might recognize the young man in the photograph there. So LinkedIn is a professional networking site, which it's good to be on. It's good to be there as a Christian, doing what you do and engaging with other people. So it's good to affirm and endorse other people. If people are sharing topics, whatever that might be about, pro-life, you can maybe add some depth to that by responding. You can suggest links, say, yeah, here's an article on this website that I found really helpful on this particular topic. And these are mostly non-Christians in this environment that we're working in. So we're there as evangelists and as witnesses to the gospel on LinkedIn. You know, you can share your worship songs, you can share your videos, you know, there's loads of things that you can share on LinkedIn. Be professional, because that's what this is about, and manage your profile. So it's keeping your profile up to date with what you're doing, with your working life, etc. And also if you've moved house or you're living in a different city, make sure that's on LinkedIn. Right, tips for reporters. So this is reporting the news. So I've been using Twitter now for quite a long time, 6-7 years. Enjoy using it. It's nice and short and punchy. So we use it at Transform Europe now. So some tips. You've only got 140 characters, so that's the individual letters and the spaces, 140 maximum. Okay. One of the things I liked about Twitter is that I didn't have to write a whole lot. But what I did have to write had to be short and to the point, and I quite like that style of things. 140 characters. You can say an awful lot in 140 characters. If I had been here for the whole day, which I know it wouldn't have worked at all, I'd have given you another exercise about writing something out in 140 characters. What about the gospel in 140 characters? Think about it. You need a URL, a web link. Okay, have you heard URL? Terrible name. Uniform Resource Locator. You never hear that, do you? Very American. It's a web link. But when you've got when you put a web link into your tweet, then you've got all the flow of more information. You see, that's the way it needs to work, mostly. It doesn't have to be every time. The example on the screen from 10 has got this. It's got a web link. Two there. So add a photograph. Again, we talked about photographs, and you want your tweet to stand out, so I get a photograph. And just to say, on photographs, it's really important that you either own the photograph, it's your photograph, okay? Or that it's one that you've permission to use, okay? It's tempting to think, well, I can get a photograph of anything on the internet and use it as I want. Well, that's breaking the copyright laws, because someone has created that photograph. I know Martin, as a photographer, will particularly understand these things. And so, but what you can do is, if you go to Google Images, there's a setting where those who have uploaded those images say that they are free for reuse. Okay, there's a number of choices you can make, and it's called Creative Commons. And so it sort of creates a license for you to use, as long as you're not using it to sort of make a whole stack of money or something. So there are some little rules about that. So there are lots of images out there, but do be careful about which ones you're using. Yeah? Yeah, photographs of people, you need permission. Yeah, it's more, it's sort of for set photographs. If it's going to be a cover of a magazine and these people are being brought into a particular setting, you get them to sign the consent form, but yeah, thanks. Just to bear that in mind, yeah. So hashtags, and it's on the keyboard, all right, the hash symbol, very important in Twitter. This is the way that people out there will find your what you say. So one of the hashtags I had to use this morning when I was just posting something about the election, it was hashtag Trump wins, because thousands of people are using Trump wins with the hash symbol directly before it. So there mustn't be a space, it's hash and then the next letter of what it is the hashtag. And you can create them. I mean, creative evangelism is one you've been using for the conference here. Brilliant. It's again, checking no one else is using that at the moment, so it's nice and it's a nice clear space for people to follow conversations about what you're doing using hashtags. And again, managing your profile on Twitter, and you've got a link back to your website in your profile. Okay, more tips for reporters using Facebook. This particular shot shows you your insights page. So if you use, if you've got a page for Facebook, have a look at insights. It tells you how the page is being viewed, whether the numbers are going up and down, etc., etc. So first point is, I would advise you for your work as an evangelist to have a Facebook page as opposed to your personal page. All right? You might have a personal Facebook account with your maybe grandchildren and all sorts of information and your holiday stuff in. That's your private information. You don't have to share that with the world. You can if you want. But within Facebook, you can create a page. It's like a business page. It's a separate page. All right, and that is around the work that you do. So I would encourage you to have those pages as separate pages. So you manage both. I've set up a page for, it was a prayer support page for a young girl down in Cornwall who'd been bedbound for, she's been bedbound for about 8 years when I first met her. And we've now got over 120 people praying for her regularly, and we do little updates, and she's actually making progress. She's been up, she's been out. It's incredible. It's a wonderful story. She had really severe ME. So that was a Facebook group, little using Facebook. When you're posting on Facebook, again, keep it reasonably short. A paragraph should be enough. Add a link to more information, say your website. Add the photograph, and then I've mentioned the insights, which is the way you look at your stats. Right, tips for photographers. Instagram. So this is a smartphone app. So you just simply download the app to your smartphone. And these are basically photos that you're sharing. It's all about the photographs. It's used a lot by younger people. Again, you use hashtags. So if you're at a particular event, if you're using Instagram today, you'd hashtag creative evangelism, okay? Just to sort of connect it with everything else that's happening. As I say, it's particularly for a young audience, but if you're wanting to engage with a young audience, you're doing something in a city centre or there's an event coming up and you want to put some photographs out there, you'll maybe name the city, it's more likely to be picked up by younger people. That's why I don't use it very much. But I do use it, and I have used it, and we used it a lot in the tourist board in Cornwall. And again, you can follow your friends on Instagram. What about Flickr? This is it's basically an online photo hosting site where you can directly upload your photographs. So you can upload on the go while you're out and about. You could do it from here if you wanted to, wherever you are. Organize your photographs into galleries. Again, managing your profile. And, the fifth one didn't appear. Right, we'll move on. Pinterest. Again, anyone heard of Pinterest? This particular image I actually have two Pinterest galleries. This one is quotes about heaven, and I use this. This is part of the promotion for the Kindle book, the ebook, that I've created some images. So these are words of famous people talking about heaven. These are sort of quotes in the public domain. And using imagery. Now, let me see go through the tips. So we're offering inspiration. It's a great idea to put some text on an image and use that on Pinterest. There's some sites with Bible verses on great photographs, and they're so popular. And people look, you might maybe receive them. You know, you sign up for these things and you can get a nice verse of scripture on a nice, with a nice photograph coming in to you regularly. But you can add text to images. There's a great, another free resource is Canva, C-A-N-V-A, Canva. And it uses, you can upload an image and you can put text on it, and it just creates a nice, it's really easy to use. And then you can then use that particular image. Use Twitter, Facebook to share your photographs, managing your boards, and again use keywords. So this is quite important with photographs. I might mention it before we've done, but when you upload something to the internet, think about what are the keywords, what are those search words that people are going to use to find it. Okay, so it might be your name, it might be a city or something that's important to you. You can tag things, you can use those keywords. Something's gone wrong. Can you help with this? I think I've come out of the PowerPoint. There's probably an embedded link there. Thank you. Right, so we're getting near the end now. Tips for broadcasters. First of all, YouTube. Now, with YouTube, I'm sure most of you have looked at YouTube, haven't you? And it's a great search. You can search on YouTube. But you can now use YouTube for live broadcasting. So you could be sitting at the back here today, holding up your phone and broadcasting everything that's going on. Oh, right. Providing you've got Wi-Fi or a very strong signal, but yeah, you can broadcast live. And a lot of churches are doing this. There are other ways to do it, but you can now do it on YouTube. As a program. Yeah. 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 I think my church does. They don't use YouTube, but they're using something else. Yeah. 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 Thank you. It's just great technology. So the opportunity for live broadcast. A little thing I've got, it's a personal little bugbear. Always check your closed captions. CC, closed captions. Now look at the image. I don't know if you can see that image there. But this is from the States, an OAC evangelist who's had a video made, okay. But nobody checked the closed captions. So when you switch it on, it doesn't make sense. There's nothing wrong with the video, and you can hear what the guy's saying, but it's just, and this is particularly for people with hearing problems. This is the way they watch the YouTube. Showcase your average, yeah, he has A9 Pi, just forgot. Yeah, it's a little feature within YouTube. If you go to the sort of little settings button around about there and click on, you'll see it. And basically, YouTube allows you just to correct in case it's picked up any words wrongly, because it actually, YouTube, yeah, it's subtitles is similar. All right, it's not quite the same, but it's and it's called closed captions. Yeah.
And then it stays on.
It does in the news feed, yeah.
Yeah. So with that, do you show it live or does it a short way around to upload it?
You can embed it in a website. You can embed that live link into a web page and have the live feed coming through. Yeah.
But it won't go straight.
Yes, it will. It does. Yeah. If the settings are public, it can be private or public. So it depends on the settings. But it will be in your yes. It's part of your account on YouTube. Again. Well, again, it's probably permission to be in that particular place that you are, if it's a public place or if it's a private place that you've got permission to film. There are rules sometimes about filming, and local authorities are quite hot on that, you know, so it depends where it is, really. Oh. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, if it's in a public space. I mean, on the news, it happens all the time, you know, it's yeah. But you just have to be careful. I mean, if you're, you know, honing in on children, for example, and you haven't, it just depends, but if it's background, yeah. Yeah, in the main, or the backs of their heads, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I've seen some great examples of some of your work on YouTube. It's just great, and it's 24/7 there, and you can look, see how many people have viewed it, and people can comment. So I need to wrap up now because, all right. So I'm just going to speed through these last few. So I think we have one more there. Yeah, add a description to your video, what it is, and you can also have a link back to your website from that description. So that just sort of completes the loop. So we've already mentioned about Facebook. It's a mobile app. Facebook Live, it does similar things to Live on YouTube. This is a fairly recent feature, but it's proving quite popular. upload the video. Again, this is this issue. Are you making it public? You need to, you know, and hopefully it is something that you can make public. Adding descriptions and tags and those closed captions and subtitles again. I think we're coming to the end now. Periscope is a brilliant little app, again, for your phone. And churches are using this. And basically, so you can live broadcast from your phone. And you, let's look at the tips, mobile app. It's linked to your Twitter account. Okay, live broadcast. You see a little heart appearing there. You can actually show that you like something, and every time you click on your touch screen or whatever, it releases those hearts to show people are liking the content. But it's not for everybody. But if you're a broadcaster, it could be your thing. So it identifies your location, and you can follow others. It's used massively, Periscope. It's very, very popular. You can try it. I've sometimes wondered about some of our prayer meetings. I know it's a bit, you think, well, why would you broadcast a prayer meeting? But for people to be able to join in, all sorts of people. And what it does, it says, you know, say you're in Cardiff, so people can search who's showing stuff on Periscope in the Cardiff area, and you could come up and someone could be following what you're doing. Just great technology. That's it. Okay, and I'm going to be around over lunch, so we'll take any questions then, but I think we're probably up for time here. So thank you very much, one and all.